But the opening of a talk is sort of like the start of a race. And that a race has this really high point of tension where it says, on your mark, get set. And that moment right between get set and go, or the gun going off, or whatever it is that highest point of tension, because anything can happen. Anything is possible, but nothing yet has.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Neil Gordon. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Neil. One, he is a former editor from Penguin, where he worked with New York Times best-selling authors. Two, he's been featured in Forbes, Fortune, Inc., NBC Palm Springs, and he's a VIP contributor for Entrepreneur. And three, despite all that success in the world of words and writing and speaking, in school, he was an abysmal English student. And in high school, he scored in the lowest 5% of the class. In other words, 95% of the people in the class were better at English than he was, which means he had a long runway to get here. Neil Gordon, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thanks very much for having me, George. Delighted to be here.
Delighted to be talking with you. And for someone who's come such a long way on the runway, you've learned as you've come along to help people deliver their message more succinctly, more effectively. And I believe when you work with speakers to help them develop a message for a speech, a presentation, you help them distill it down. And where do you start? Where do you start with them?
One of the things that so many speakers struggle with, George, is that they know a lot of information. They have a lot of knowledge. They've been developing their expertise for often decades. But the larger issue they face is that they basically have forgotten what it's like not to know something. And then they go out on stage or they give a virtual presentation and they do what we call the show up and throw up. They just vomit out all of their information. They cram, if they have 45 minutes to talk, they cram as much of their content into that 45 minutes as they can. But for a person who doesn't know what they know, right, who is a newbie, who is a beginner at whatever their subject matter expertise is, they might find value in all of that content. But because learning is so metabolically expensive, it can be overwhelming. And then the friction comes when they don't actually look, like they don't actually make anything actionable once the talk is over. They think, oh, that was really good. And then they move on and they've completely forgotten about it. I know that I've been an audience member like that many times over, where I appreciated the value that they had to share, but I just couldn't sort it out in my own mind and I couldn't make it actionable, or at least I didn't, and I preferred not to. And so that's the larger issue.
And when you talk, when you coach, you consult a speaker, do they push back and say, but I can't leave something out? What if I leave something out? And they think I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And what you are highlighting there, George, is a larger issue that so many experts have. And it's not even just picking on experts. People are like this in general, is that they go about solving a problem from their perspective. In that a person is going up on stage and they're thinking, am I going to seem authoritative enough? Are people going to be paying attention? Are they going to have me back? Am I being paid enough for this? Or how do I actually get paid for this? They're focused on their stuff, but effective communication values the recipient over the sender. And the focus on the audience and their fulfilling their needs winds up leading to all the amazing things like seeming like an authority and getting paid to speak and doing all the things that one wants to have in their life. But it's in service of the audience that generally leads service to service of themselves. And so that winds up being a very important distinction there. And so if people are thinking to themselves, oh, but I want to seem like I know what I'm talking about when I'm on stage, they're already undermining their authority. It's a really kind of a funny paradox, is that if they're focused on seeming like an expert, then they're going to degrade their capacity to seem like an expert, because people might think, oh, this person really knows their stuff, but they're not going to be inspired and compelled to act on it. They're not going to come up with their business card afterwards. And they're not going to do all these other things. I mean, some people will, of course, because you can see what sticks in that regard. But I mean, I had one speaker client who would get 2-3 referrals from any given gig. And then we made a simple shift in the opening of his talk before we had even worked out his message or anything. We just helped him to create new context. And he wound up getting 11 direct referral gigs from that one talk and made about $85,000 in speaker fees from that one gig. And so they weren't thinking about whether he was an authority. They were thinking, can he help me to solve a problem that I desperately want to solve? And so that's really the important distinction there, George.
So you flip from getting a couple requests to 11 requests. You've teased us. Tell us what the difference was.
In that particular case, what he was doing is what so many other speakers do, is just starting with his solution, starting with the topic as he understands it, starting with the issue as he diagnoses it. And from his, like I said, people forget what it's like not to know something. And so he went in assuming that people were already going to be on the same page as him. But all he did was focus on the problems as his audience experienced it. People are most likely to embrace a solution when it's provided within the context of a problem they care about solving. And so what he did was I believe it was a Salesforce, and he just started talking about how hard it is to stand out amidst the competition and how people seem to check out as soon as they start talking about it was a very technical kind of organization, and they brought a lot of technical know-how to the services they were providing. And it seemed like whenever they started talking about their services, people would just tune out and all of that. And so we started with the problems as they experienced it, and then transitioned into reframing the problem as he understood it, and then providing the solution. And before, like I said, George, we hadn't even worked out what his message was yet. But they were so invested in solving the problem because he understood the problem from their perspective that they showed up at the end with business cards and said, we need to talk. And that's what made the difference. And that's what led to all of those gigs.
It sounds like we can, as when we're in the audience, we can connect better with the speaker when we believe the speaker understands us.
Yes. Yes. People are most likely to embrace our solutions when they feel that we understand their problem.
And that may be simply recognize the challenges that the audience faces, as opposed to saying, oh, you guys are doing it all wrong. All you have to do is follow my system.
Right. I mean, there's a time and a place for the system. And I want to be very clear to our listeners that this is a very significant part of creating the value that we can as a speaker and an expert as a whole. However, are they going to want to hear about a system, or did they wake up that morning thinking, oh, I hope I learn a new system today? No, they woke up thinking about how revenue is down from the previous quarter, or how they need to, they're hemorrhaging staff, and there's this great resignation that everyone's talking about these days and everything. And they need to retain better people and keep people around. Or they might not even be thinking about business. They might be thinking about their personal life, how their kid is having problems at school, or how they had a big fight with their spouse the night before, whatever it is. They're thinking about problems that they care about, not some abstract notion of a thing they might learn someday. And so we meet them where they're at and then go from there.
And so I'm hearing that the first step for the speaker is to find a way to connect with the audience.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like, we have to remember, George, that people are people are people. And people have an emotional and an intellectual and all other kinds of experiences, a social experience, all these different things that are all piled together in their minds and their hearts when they sit down in that seat and listen. And so if we are able to address the whole person on some level and marry both the intellectual and the emotional, then they'll stay with us. And it's kind of funny, when I present myself, I sometimes wonder, like, do they just hate me because they're just completely stoic and frozen? And then I realize, based on the response afterwards, that they weren't resenting me or simmering with hate or anything. They were completely transfixed. They were like stone because they weren't moving because they were so captivated by what I was saying. And that's a very important thing to remember, is that people want to be captivated. They want to be transfixed. They want to be convinced that change is possible. And that's the difference between a good enough speaker and an absolutely outstanding one.
How do we transfix the audience?
Okay. What so many speakers, and this is particularly in a live talk, I mean, we need to qualify everything we talk about as either being live or virtual. And I'll have a tip for virtual talks as well, of course. But when it comes to a live presentation and you're in front of 50, 100, or multiple hundreds of people, even thousands, some of my clients speak in front of thousands at a time. The mistake that most speakers make is that they visit with the audience and they ingratiate themselves. And so someone introduces us and we walk out onto the stage and everyone's applauding and they say, oh, and we say, oh, thank you so much. And it's so nice to be here. And oh, isn't so-and-so who just introduced me great? And how about a nice round of applause for so-and-so? And on and on and on it goes. And so for the first 7, 10, 15, 20 seconds, they're just kind of like, oh, wow, thank you so much. But the opening of a talk is sort of like the start of a race. And that a race has this really high point of tension where it says, on your mark, get set. And that moment right between get set and go, or the gun going off or whatever it is that highest point of tension, because anything can happen. Anything is possible, but nothing yet has. And similarly, at the start of a talk, you've walked out on stage. You're there. Your audience is there. Nothing has happened yet. Anything is possible. It's a very pregnant, high point of tension. But what saying, oh, thank you so much, it's so nice to be here, does is it squanders that tension. It disperses it. It basically is saying, I hope you all like me, so I'm going to try to be nice and polite to you. As opposed to, I absolutely promise you that the best thing that you can do for yourself right now is pay attention to every word I have to say. And so, and I'm not saying to say that literally, but energetically, that's what we want to convey. And so what we can do instead, someone introduces us, we walk out on stage, and we just start with a compelling opening line of a talk. It doesn't have to be a story, but often with my clients, it's a story at the start. And so one of my favorite examples is a former client of mine, and she had this big national keynote for her company's national conference. And she just started with, a longtime friend of mine didn't know what to do. And that was it. And at that point, you could hear the pin drop, because she took all that tension and she harnessed it. And then underneath the subtext of that statement was, you guys are going to want to hear this. People are most likely to pay attention to us when they're emotionally invested in doing so. And that's what that tip does, is it compels them on an emotional level to pay attention.
And I can imagine an opening line like that would grab attention because now people are intrigued, they're curious, and it appears that she's going to reveal something intimate.
Right, right. There's something that not everyone's going to get to hear, but because they're there right there in that moment, they get to, and they're going to serve themselves well by paying attention.
What about, tell us about the packaging of the message itself, the key message of the presentation. How does one go about that, especially if the message is complicated?
There's a movie that came out about 10 years ago starring Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill called Moneyball. And this is about the American Major League Baseball organization, but specifically the Oakland A's. They're a small market team. Their payroll is about a third of the big market teams like the New York Yankees. And yet in 2002, the year that the movie is set, they go on to not only have to tie the Yankees for the most number of wins in a season, but they also break the American League record for the most consecutive wins. And yet they did it on this teeny tiny payroll as a small market team. And how did they do that? And the movie tells a story of how they did. But it's based on this concept that, of course, the movie is called Moneyball. And Jonah Hill plays a fictional character, though Brad Pitt is based on the real-life general manager, Billy Beane. And at one point, Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill are speaking early on in the movie in a parking garage where Jonah is explaining the concept. Now, Moneyball, I mean, this character is from Yale and majored in economics. And as we know, George, economics is a very complicated thing. But he doesn't start with all the complicated stuff. He just says, there is an epidemic failure in the game of baseball to understand what is really happening. And then he describes how most of these teams are focused on buying the best players. They think you're going to win by buying players. But he says, you're not going to succeed by focusing on players. You need to focus on buying wins. And the way you buy wins is to buy runs. And so he says that there's an epidemic failure in what most teams are doing and that they're buying players. But what we really need to do as baseball teams is buy runs. Okay. Now, the original question you asked, George, was how do we package our message, especially when it's complicated? What Jonah does in that moment is distill everything down to an essential idea, a single idea that could be said in as little as a sentence. And so if we were to package that in what I call a silver bullet technique, the silver bullet technique, right, which we see in the best TED Talks and the best nonfiction selling books and the, you know, like ancient quotes by philosophers like Aristotle and Socrates and stuff like that, right? We see this one technique again and again. And what it is a cause and effect sentence. When we take one action, we get this one outcome. And so in the case of Moneyball, when we buy runs, that's the action, we win the game. And that's the outcome. And so, and I can provide as many examples as our listeners would potentially want to hear, but we see this cause and effect sentence again and again. And so the objective is to distill all of your expertise down to this one cause and effect sentence and then build your content around that.
Cause and effect. When you put it that way, it sounds so simple. It makes sense.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Why do you think people have trouble distilling it down to cause and effect?
This really revisits a larger theme that we already talked about earlier in our conversation, George, which is about seeing things from our own perspective, right? And seeing things based on all of our knowledge. So even when I teach people about the silver bullet, a common thing that many of them do when they try to write out one for themselves is they say, they might get the outcome, the effect part, right? And they say, the key to, let's see, what will be an example? The key to being an effective manager, like, let's say corporate managers, like corporate officers and all that. The key to being an effective manager is to do X, Y, and Z. And they come up with like three actions, right? Because they've got all this knowledge and they keep focusing on more, more, more. And then they do that. And the reason for that is because they keep thinking about stuff as they've codified it, as they've systemized and understood it, right? And the reason why that's so hard, such a hard habit to get away from is that because of this burden of knowledge, because of all of this stuff that's going on in their heads, it's just not become their natural state to focus on less. They're focusing on their 10, 20, 30 years of expertise and just want to get that out because they're so hungry to be heard themselves. And so in that desire to be heard, they want, they're just, their default setting is to provide more and more.
And you, are you suggesting that if they come up with, here's three things, that's too much? It needs to be distilled down to one point, one cause and effect?
I will say this, that the only hard and fast rule of communications, George, is that there are no hard and fast rules. And so if I come off seeming dogmatic, I really regret that because it's not what I want people to come away with. It's more a matter of observing. When you go on to Brainy Quote and you look at Aristotle's top quotes or Socrates' top quotes or any of these other people who have been, or if you even look in the Kindle edition of these nonfiction books that have sold thousands and thousands of copies and see which ones have been highlighted the most because it aggregates the most highlighted passages, what we see, not that there are no sentences that have a few things instead of just one, but the ones that just have the one thing, the one-to-one, the one action that leads to one outcome, that just happens to be the most highlighted or the most voted upon on Brainy Quote or whatever it is. It's just a trend that I've observed more journalistically. And so the work is to help people to find that conciseness.
And I don't recall that line from the movie Moneyball, but when I hear it, here's how I've translated it in my mind. So players, we don't need to buy players to win. We need to buy runs to wins, because runs make wins. And you know, it sounds so logical, of course, because more runs, higher score. Right. More runs than the competition. That's what we need to focus on. Ah, it's so simple.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard that analogy before.
Yeah. Yeah. There are lots of great examples of how this conciseness shows up. And a buddy of mine and I like to talk about movies and stuff. And we were even considering the possibility that it would be funny just to send a viewer through a whole montage compilation of all these different silver bullets that have shown up in movies and TV over time, just because it just shows up everywhere, but it's overlooked and it's certainly not consciously sought out. And another point I have actually in terms of why this is so effective and why it makes a difference between having one thing in your sentence as opposed to three is that the less need for interpretation there is, the more effective the passage will be. And so if you have three actions instead of just one, then there is more interpretation that do we do them in order? Is one more important than the others? And so there are these subconscious or unconscious questions that are happening that just make it less sticky, George. And so that's another point to make, is that the less need for interpretation required, the more impactful the passage will be.
So one strong point is always better than three mediocre points.
Right. Right. I mean, always. I mean, like I said, I'm reluctant to ever be hard and fast about any of this. But from what I've observed and the trends and the most effective and most responded to passages of text, that does seem to be the case. Yes.
And it's curious. I gave advice to a client recently who had started his presentation with three strong quotes. And I said, the problem with that is you got strong quote, strong quote, strong quote, and they sap the energy from each other. None of them stands out.
That's exactly. I mean, I really appreciate that observation, George, because I would agree that that's what happens. If you have this one powerful epigraph at the beginning of a passage or something like that, it just lands and it gives them something to think about. But if you give them two or three or however many, it becomes noise. It winds up dispersing that energy. It's kind of a theme for us today. It's like at the beginning of a talk, you disperse the energy rather than harness it. And if you bring too much stuff at the beginning, then like in an epigraph, like quote, yeah, that's going to wind up dispersing the energy as well.
And curiously, what just came to my mind is the statement from the famous speech that Martin Luther King did. And if you ask anybody who can remember him in the speech, they can probably tell you the line, "I have a dream."
Yeah.
Can they remember anything else? Maybe, maybe not. But most of us will remember, "I have a dream." It was a powerful line that really, really simplified the message.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are lots of different people who will weigh in and say that simple is better in these regards. What I would really like for our listeners to come away with is the insight that you can be absolutely deliberate and even mechanical about how you can construct that simplicity. It's something that you can predictably get a response to because of the mechanics of that cause and effect sentence.
If people want to learn more about Neil Gordon and the programs that you provide, they can find your website, neilcanhelp.com. And I believe you have a quiz on there to help them identify their speaking style.
Yeah. And what we were talking about earlier, George, is that with that opening line kind of technique that we discussed, that takes some nerve. That takes It's like just to go against the grain and just not do what's expected. I mean, that takes a bit of juice. And so what the quiz does is it shows the participant what speaker type, what personality type they have, that they can harness that personality in that opening moment, as well as other moments throughout the talk, so that they feel a little bit more comfortable in their skin when they take that kind of risk. And so the quiz is going to be really handy for a number of reasons, but one of the specific ones is that it will really help them to step into their most powerful self in those opening 7 seconds.
So the quiz will help them leverage their natural strengths to make them feel that it's okay to do that.
Yeah, okay to take, not even okay, but just absolutely brilliant of an opportunity to take that risk.
And people can find the link in the description below. Neil, before we wrap up, if you could offer one, two, or three, or maybe just one, I'm reluctant to ask for three now, but if you could offer advice to a business leader who's preparing a presentation to the team. Perhaps it's the annual meeting, perhaps it's a quarterly retreat, and they're putting together a message. What advice would you give them to have a successful presentation that people remember and act upon?
I will give one piece of advice per your question, George, and that is to become absolutely religious about the problems that your participants, your employees are experiencing as they understand it, and to create your message as an extension of solving those problems to whatever extent you have the capacity to do. And so again, people are most likely to embrace a solution when it's provided within the context of a problem they care about solving. And if your solution, your vision for the company for the next quarter is a certain thing, they will get on board. Much more likely to get on board if you first help them to feel seen and heard. And it starts with the problem as they understand it. And what you do is you just go out and you find out before the day of. You learn, what are you guys struggling with right now? What has it been like for you? And then you talk about that at the beginning and then artfully transition into things from your own perspective, and they'll come along with you for the ride.
Powerful advice. My guest today is Neil Gordon, reminding you that this presentation is more successful when the speaker values the recipient over themselves.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.